perhaps there's another group that would love to expand their expenditures, and that's what this group should be looking at to determine how the money can be best utilized. But thank you, I appreciate it.
Sure.
I'll stop talking about it now.
No, I think it's actually a great discussion that we should be having. This is Chris again. I'm sort of explained who it was commenting earlier. I apologize for that. But I do, I want to let the members of this committee know that we're also, Margie has mentioned lately in our internal discussions here that we are now, we're sort of facing a challenge from some clients who are not users of American Sign Language, but, you know, use spoken English to communicate, who are asking about access to these community integration services that, you know, we find that CAN meets the need in a really successful way for our clients who are users of ASL. But we are encountering some of our BESBE client membership on the folks on the spectrum of deafblindness who are seeking similar supports, but because they don't use ASL, they're trying to figure out if there's a way for them to get the support of an SSP or support service provider. And I don't know if Margie is able to say anything about that. I know, Margie, did you want to sort of mention in general a little bit of the outlines of some of that discussion?
Sure. So this is Margie speaking. I have several clients that are not receiving services that are considered deafblind by the American, or by RSA, which is Rehabilitation Services Administration. So some of them would be completely blind and severely hard of hearing. They have cochlear implants or they have hearing aids. They do not know sign language. And they would like to use the SSP services, that's what it's there for. But many of them are not getting served. And then I haven't even recommended other clients that I have to get services from an SSP because it's been very, how can I say, kind of frustrating for some of my clients that are getting some services, but they don't feel that it's very, very good for them. Because, for example, I have one client who stated that the person who is serving her is the vendor, or the SSP is deaf and does not speak. So it's really hard for them to communicate. My client is completely blind and really hard of hearing. And so she can't understand what's being said. So I'm having a couple of those that CAN is trying to serve some of them, but then I have many others that are not getting served and they don't feel comfortable asking CAN for services. And then I have several others that I'm not even recommending to CAN because the ones that are getting served are not using the services robustly. If I'm hoping I'm making sense. I'm trying to protect client, you know, client confidentiality as well.
Hey, this is Hannah Tyler. I have a question for you, Chris. Should we make a comment or a motion for anything on this particular topic? Or may I just continue with next topic?
Yeah. Tara has a comment.
Okay, go ahead.
This is Tara speaking, and I see Lisa Flatterly-Vaughn has her hand raised as well. I just want to add that as the New England regional representative for HKNC, I've worked with other states that do provide SSP services to the range of deafblindness. People who are hard of hearing and blind or hard of hearing and low vision can still definitely benefit from these services. So I do think we should expand to acknowledge that need, but I also do understand that there are staff shortages and it's hard to find enough SSPs to match people appropriately. But I want to share that just because someone doesn't use sign language doesn't mean they couldn't benefit from SSP services, and I definitely promote the use of SSPs or communication facilitators for anyone who has combined vision and hearing loss. As Margie said, that falls under the definition for RSA, or in our case, the Helen Keller Act.
Okay, and I'll hold on 1 second as I switch over to Lisa Flaherty-Vaughn.
Mm-hmm. Yes, hello, this is Lisa again. I did want to clarify a question that I have for you, Margie. I know you mentioned the SSP services, and just to be sure I understand correctly, RSA, I know that, you know, SSPs are focused on those individuals, whether they are or are not proficient in ASL, just as long as they are deafblind. But we do know that there is a wide variety of levels of communication involved with deafblind individuals, ranging from those who don't sign, those who use tactile sign, and so on. And so I'm not clear as to what the RSA is referring to. Is that something that is a referral service, or would you mind just clarifying what that is? You know, I'm wondering if it's possible that there may be a little bit of a conflict between BESBE with SSPs as far as, you know, maybe BESBE itself needing to kind of improve the system for SSPs, provide better communication access in general for whatever a client's needs may be. So if you could just clarify that, that would be great.
Okay, so this is Margie. So RSA is Rehabilitation Services Administration. It's basically the nation's administration that serves like rehabilitation services. So the Helen Keller National Center is the one who kind of defined back, I think, in the early 90s or maybe even long, you know, previous to that. Tara, if you can please step in if I'm not stating the right timing. But the Helen Keller Center has the an act that was set before legislation that serves clients that would be deafblind, hard of hearing, and visually impaired. SSPs are for all of our clients are considered on the deafblind spectrum, whether that be hard of hearing and visually impaired, or whether that be completely deaf, completely blind. If they use sign language, if they use spoken English, if they use Rochester method, print on palm, whatever type of communication that they prefer, and is the communication mode that is accessible to them. Some use home sign, so they don't know ASL per se, but they have home sign, and that's why some of our individual consumers are matched with, the family will match somebody with the consumer to help them to facilitate communication that way. Originally, this whole grant was set up for clients that were intellectually disabled, and then the families went before legislation because they were isolated, and so they went before legislation, and legislation gave them money so that they can get their loved ones out of a group home or out of a center so that they could be integrated into the community. There are several, the money is originally to go to select clients who were part of a pilot study back in the 70s. The money goes first of all and foremost, it goes to select clients, and those would be many of our clients that are in Oak Hill. The money first goes to them. Then if there's leftover money, it goes to the rest of those who've been added on that we consider deafblind. Again, with all ranges, whether that be hard of hearing, you know, visually impaired, if they use sign language, if they don't use sign language, whatever kind of communication that they prefer. So I'm not sure if I'm speaking to your specific question, but I'm just wanting to let you know that the money is there for to support people, to get them out into the community, to be able to have access to the community, because several of our clients that are in Oak Hill are not getting the services, or maybe if they're in a group home. I have several other clients that are not able to access the services because CAN isn't providing a English speaking person or SSP person to work with my clients that do not know sign language. And several other of my clients don't feel comfortable calling on CAN to say, look, I have these meetings coming up or these appointments coming up. They kind of feel like they're not deaf enough, and that really shouldn't be put on them. And that's kind of how some of my clients have expressed to me how they feel. They don't feel comfortable calling CAN because they don't feel like there's a good match. And again, this is not to put CAN services down or the SSPs that CAN has hired or anything like that. It's just I'm looking at another way to help facilitate communication for my clients that are not receiving services.
Okay, this is Hannah.
I'm sorry, this is Pat. Hold on one second. Lisa Flaherty has another comment.
Yes, Lisa here. Thank you so much for that clarification in regards to the RSA history and grant funding and so on. I appreciate that clarification. I agree that CAN is in a wonderful program that is good for those individuals who do use sign language and most suited possibly. I did just want to add another idea that maybe FESBE, potentially create or improve their old system and maybe come up with something that maybe we could just, pilot with some better technology and communication access and make changes to what we've had in the past in order to provide those services that maybe are more communication centered, for the variety of other individuals that we do have utilizing these services, and that would provide more of an option that may be better suited. Again, this is just a thought for the future, and knowing that we all can work to improve. So, thank you, and that would be the end of my comment.
Okay, this is Hannah Tyler. Thank you for all their suggestions. I really feel there must be some kind of solution for the communication and to make sure that clients get all the services that they need. It's certainly something we need to think about. Chris, I want to ask you, may we move on? I know...
Yes, absolutely, Hannah. I think... we should probably go on to point B now, the report on the meeting about deafblind classification issues.
Okay. So the next one is the report on BESPE BRS meeting about deafblind classification. Yes. So would that be something, Chris, you can give us?
So I've been talking a lot lately in this meeting, and I wondered if we might turn to Margie and some of the folks from BRS who are present to kind of provide an update on that discussion that took place a few weeks ago.
I'll let Heidi, this is Margie, I'll let Heidi speak.
If you don't mind, if we have a BESPE representative speak on this topic.
Okay, that's fine. This is Margie. Yeah, I had seen Heidi in the corner, so I thought she wanted to make a comment. Okay. All right, so we had a meeting with Alvin Cheggy and Heidi Hanair and Jill Rezeka. She's the one who works in our system. It's a computer system that we have. And I noticed that there was no way to actually pull up how many clients were considered deafblind in that category. Our system just doesn't allow for that to, you know, to pull those numbers up. So I was asking about how we could actually, you know, find clients. I mean, I do have several clients that I've identified that are considered deafblind, but then I didn't know if there was a way to find others that are kind of like, you know, not identified for them to get services, and they're kind of like just dropped out of, you know, not receiving services, and if we could reach out to them. So we just had a discussion about how to include our clients and if we should actually certify them as being identified as having deafblindness. So I'm not sure, you know, what we're going to do with the computer system itself. It has to go before the interim director to see if we can't change anything in our system. But we did bring up how, you know, there's a spectrum of people that would be identified as having deafblindness, with being hard of hearing, you know, deaf, whether they be blind, visually impaired. So there is that range and that spectrum. And we are adopting the Helen Keller National Center Act as the way to certify them as being deafblind, and have that little box be checked. And that will actually help us in the future as well. There has been a national Deaf Professionals Network that is trying to also identify clients that have deafblindness, and for VR purposes. And so this box being checked will also help facilitate that, and in the federal reporting. And because there has been a severe lack of knowledge of how many people they're actually serving that are considered deafblind. You know, people who are blind are being tracked, and then people who maybe in VRS, I'm assuming that they're tracked if they're deaf. But then, there's a severe lack of knowledge of how many people would be considered deafblind. It's not in research. There's a severe lack of research and just, you know, identifying people to be able to study, to bring up the numbers and maybe get federal dollars for them, possibly, you know, open up situations for jobs, you know, different things like that. So we're trying to identify clients that would be specifically labeled as deafblind, not in a derogatory way, but in a way to actually help improve services.
And I believe that Heidi Hanair has a comment. Hold on 1 second.
I did also want to just add, yes, thank you, Margie. VRS here does have a means of identifying deafblind individuals. We do adhere to the RSA guidelines in that respect. We identify individuals who are deaf signers, spoken deaf individuals, hard of hearing, visual impaired, visual and hard of hearing speakers, deafblind individuals, and those who are deafblind and have their own categories as well. We do provide that information to the AB and have that information on hand. The Deafblind Network meeting that is actually taking place tomorrow, this is the one that Margie was just referring to, that is a VR-specific program where we have already identified individuals who are deafblind and again are following that. So if there's anything further that you would like in regards to that, please let me know and I'd be glad to send that along.
This is Hannah Tyler. Thank you for the update. Are there any comments or questions?
Lisa Flaherty. Oh, I'm sorry, Hannah. Lisa Flaherty has a comment.
Go ahead.
Hold on one second.
Yes, this is Lisa again. Thank you so much for this wonderful discussion. I know that we are getting short on time, and I'm just wondering, do we need to move further along on the agenda? Because I know that Jesse had something that he wanted to speak to, and I just want to make sure we don't run out of time before that happens. That's all.
Okay. It's Hannah Tyler. Yes, I agree. We are getting short on time. So the next thing on the agenda is meeting dates for 2022. If you next meeting date would be July 28th. I'm sorry, 2022, and then the next date would be 10/25/2022. So mark your calendars. And now we will have BESPE program updates. So would that be something Chris Lassen can give us?
We had discussed this in the run-up to today's meeting, because, of course, on this advisory committee, we do have representation from our BESBE Vocational Rehabilitation Program and also from BESBE's Children's Services Program. And we are in the process of developing a regular update procedure so that Mary Johns from Children's Services can sort of bring us current on developments in their work with BESBE Children's Services clients who are persons with deaf blindness, as well as the VR program providing us general updates on their work with clients. And so I did want to sort of, Crystal Kelly could not be at this meeting, and I know, but she and I have discussed having somebody from BESBE's transition services, that would be the counseling staff in the VR program that works with transition age youth between the ages of 14 and whenever they graduate from high school or age out of ability at the advent of their 22nd birthday. So we're going to have someone from the transition services provide us on an update on the sorts of services they're providing to clients with deaf blindness at our next meeting. And Mary, I thought I could just kind of give you guys a brief overview of the numbers of students that Children's Services is working with, children with deaf blindness. Mary, do you have a minute to kind of just summarize that quickly?
I do. Thank you, Chris. For those of you who don't know me, my name is Mary Johns. I am a teacher of the visually impaired in the Children's Services Division at BESBE. I serve primarily students with deaf blindness, hard of hearing. And throughout the year, I provide their teams in strategies, accommodations that will facilitate the deaf blind students' access to the curriculum in all manners. I am currently taking, and I'm nearly finished with the Open Hands, Open Access Intervener training modules. And this has provided me further training that I can then share with teams in helping the students be as successful as possible. Does anyone have any specific questions for me? Okay, thank you.
And Chris, the next agenda, we have bylaws update.
Yes, thanks. I had asked if Andrew Norton could do a brief review of some of the background on the legislative language and what we need to work on to sort of punch up our programs, definitions, and make it clearer, perhaps, what some of our focuses should be. I don't know if Andrew is on now. If he can take over, that would be great.
Yes. Excuse me. I'm just playing with my screen here. It's gotten all screwy. I think people were talking about the bylaws for the group. I am not aware of the existence of the bylaws for this group. We have bylaws for other boards, and they're very similar. Often enough, they're quite similar to the bylaws of other boards. People often use other bylaws as a template to copy from, and we have them on the BSB board, the advisory board, the State Rehabilitation Council, the advisory board for persons who are deaf and hard of hearing and deaf-blind has bylaws, but I'm not in possession of bylaws for this group, I'm afraid to say. There are regulations which talk about the membership of the group, and I'll have to say they are pretty ancient. They are 40 years old, and they really describe a different time in this program. The program has evolved quite a bit. It's quite different than it was set out to be 40 years ago or 45 years ago. And so it does talk about membership, but not really exactly how you do the membership now. Now, I don't think there are any state police outside the door waiting to arrest people for not having done the membership just exactly correctly. I think most people recognize this is a group of dedicated people, professionals and sincere advocates who bring together a good conversation about running this program. But the agency probably should at some point redesign these regulations, which is kind of a long process. It can often take a year or two. But if you were to write bylaws, they kind of have to sort of work within the context of the regulations, which, as I say, are very out of date. So as I look at the regulations, and I'm just bringing them up on my screen, and it talks about membership, it says this: the membership shall include an administrator from BSBE, a board member from BSBE, and the agency coordinator from BSBE. Is that you, Chris Lassen? Is Chris Lassen still on?
I'm sorry, I was muted. Yes, I would be the, yes, the, I believe, what was the term, program?
Agency coordinator.
Agency coordinator, yes.
The BSBE agency coordinator for, there isn't a definition of the agency coordinator, but it is something referred to in the regulations. Then it says a representative from Oak Hill, a representative from the Department of Mental Retardation, excuse me, but actually three from the Department of, again, now Developmental Services, the Central Office, Southbury, and Mansfield. Well, Mansfield doesn't even exist anymore. A representative from the Commission on the Deaf and Hearing Impaired, which doesn't exist anymore. A representative from the New England Regional Center. And then it says, so there's no number placed on the membership. Then it says, and one-third of the members shall be parents, parent representatives. At least one of whom should be from Southbury and one of whom should be from Oak Hill. But it definitely intends that there should be a number of parents, because I've just named 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6,